So it is 10 a.m. and we are going to get started. I'm hoping that we can get to Rav Mashash in some measure today, but we have to start out with the topic that we started on last time with the Baba Sali. I'm hoping my recording comes out all right. I managed to break my recorder yesterday afternoon, and we'll see. I'm using my phone right now until the new recorder shows up. So hopefully this is audible and clear in some measure. Last time round, we started talking about the Baba Sali by taking Moroccan Jewry from the 18th century up into the 20th century. I'm not going to recap that right now, although some of the changes that we described will impact what we talk about when we talk about the Baba Sali. We talked about the rise of the Elbaz family, which became the Abu Chatzera family. And we mentioned at the end last time the change from Elbaz to Abu Chatzera, the idea of Chatzer or Chatzera as the mat that either, depending on which version of the story you accept, was the family's commercial product or was a term for Rabbi Shmuel Elbaz because he was a hermit who sort of kept to himself in piety and he was called a Chatzeri, or alternatively, the story that we read of Rabbi Shmuel Elbaz and the time he sailed on his mat, this Chatzera or Chatzer, on the water. Regardless, that was basically where we left off, was Rabbi Shmuel Elbaz, and we pick up from him. Okay? That's where we are. We're not yet at Rabbi Yisrael Abu Chatzera, the Baba Sali. That's where we have to go. Okay? Everyone good? We know where we are. We know what we're doing. Okay. So Rabbi Shmuel Elbaz's grandson, Rabbi Machluf, became known as a Kadosh. When I use the term Kadosh, right? Kadosh in Hebrew means... what does Kadosh mean?
Holy.
Holy, right. We're not defining holy. That's just going to get us into too much trouble. But a Kadosh, Kadosh is a phenomenon that was widespread among both Jews and Muslims in Morocco, and particularly in the villages that were away from the coast. The term Kadosh gets used in Christianity for a saint. Not quite the same, but there are elements that are common between them. The Kadosh is somebody of great personal piety, and this person gets visited by people who want the Kadosh's blessing. Blessings for health, blessings for livelihood, blessings for fertility. People would visit the Kadosh in his lifetime, and after his passing, they would visit the grave of the Kadosh, and particularly for the Hilula, for the anniversary of their death, when they would have a special celebration. We tend to call it a yahrzeit in Yiddish. There's a lot to be said, actually, for the differences between the way Ashkenazim and Sfardim mark a yahrzeit, and the history in Ashkenaz of fasting on the yahrzeit, and the history in Sfarad of making it a day of celebration. That's a fascinating topic in its own right. But my point right now is just in mentioning that Rabbi Shmuel Elbaz's grandson, Rabbi Machluf, becomes known as a Kadosh in Morocco. And we're going to come back later to talk more about what the significance is of a Kadosh. But the Abu Chatzera family became known for piety, became known for scholarship, but when I say scholarship, I mean a particular kind of scholarship. What I mean is not writing a lot of sfarim, a lot of books. Rather, what we're talking about is that they were diligent in their studies. They were devoted to their studies. That's what we're talking about. In Hebrew, the term is hasmada or hatmada, that they're perpetually studying. They also became known for producing arak, an alcoholic drink from dates. The one and only time I was exposed to arak was on Purim when I was in yeshiva in Israel. And I had some arak then. Tasted like licorice. Not something that I'm particularly looking to try again. But the Abu Chatzera gains some fame, certainly locally. And then it depends who you ask whether they're at that point famous beyond the local area. Some are more skeptical of it, nonetheless. This brings us to Rabbi Yaakov Abu Chatzera. He was born in the year 1806, and he brings the family's legend to another level. His father, who's named Masud, was a rabbi, and his father moved to Rissani. Rissani is in southeast Morocco, so you're now away from the coast, and they lived in the Mela, the Jewish community area in Rissani. Yaakov was an Eloi. He was known as a precocious genius in his youth. And his father took him to learn in larger communities. But even there, the rabbis could not keep up with him. And he is studying not only traditional scholarship, Talmud, Jewish law, but he's also studying Kabbalah. As a teen, he goes to Marrakesh to learn. Marrakesh is a major community. You have a lot of scholars there. And he impresses even the sages there. And as the story goes, even they can't teach him. And so he goes back to Rissani to learn on his own. At the age of 18, he gets married. He ultimately has 4 sons and 2 daughters. And he starts to wander from place to place and becomes known in both the Jewish and Muslim communities for the power of his blessings. But not only the power of his blessings. Take a look on your sheet in source number 1. And you get a story about Rabbi Yaakov Abu Chatzera. This story is recorded in the book I mentioned last time, Kedoshim Be'eravon Mugbal, Saints Incorporated, so to speak, or Saints Limited. From time to time, the saint, meaning Rabbi Yaakov Abu Chatzera, traveled to Marrakesh, traveling the same route he did as a young man, but this time riding a mule bought for him by the local Jews. When he was younger, he did it walking. On one of these trips, an emissary from Israel joined him. En route, before the city Warzazat, bandits stopped the 2 travelers and demanded that the saint descend from the mule. Rabbi Yaakov asked them, "What do you want of us?" "Not much," the bandits replied, "only to take the mule and kill you." The saint began to descend from the mule. I'm not sure why when I did this translation, I kept writing saint. I really don't like it as a translation. Just change it to kadosh. I'm not sure why I did that. The kadosh began to descend from the mule while reciting Shema. Suddenly the bandits went mute and their legs and hands shriveled. The kadosh continued to pray and the emissary stood off to the side, not believing what he was seeing. The Kadosh asked to help him ascend the mule, and the 2 continued on their way and left the armed bandits frozen in the middle of the road. The story became known to the cities of Warzazat and Dades, and they rushed out to the road. They caught up to Rabbi Yaakov and asked him for mercy upon the bandits who were from those towns. Rabbi Yaakov explained that he had not done anything. God was the one who paralyzed them. But after they continued to plead, he set conditions before the tribal leaders demanding that they commit not to attack travelers, whether Jews or Muslims. Only after they promised this did Rabbi Yaakov pray for the welfare of the bandits and their limbs were released. So this is testimony to the power of Rabbi Yaakov's words. He became a teacher of Torah. Both classic Torah, again, Talmud Jewish law, and mystical Torah. He held feasts from time to time with plentiful arak. But you have to keep in mind, he's in Morocco, right? And not in the Portuguese-controlled section either. So some of the local authorities, the Muslim authorities, were not so happy about the alcohol at these parties. On the other hand, some of the local Muslims came and drank, which, of course, didn't make the authorities very happy. He wanted to make Aliyah, but each attempt was foiled. And in his final attempt, he died in Egypt, and that's where he was buried. There's actually a whole story involving that. His grave there and the Hilula celebrated there in the last like 10, 15 years. If you look it up online, you can find information about that. Well, Rabbi Yaakov's sons all have communal standing. They all become communal leaders. Some of them are teachers of Torah. Some of them collect and distribute tzedakah for the needy. And this is where the name Baba comes in. Baba is a title meaning father, right? Think father, like Abba. So it's a title that is given to people of standing. And Rabbi Yaakov's sons get the title of Baba. His son Yitzchak becomes known as a Kadosh, just like he was. He's also famed for his attachment to Arak. That's a whole other thing. And he is murdered by Muslims at one point during riots. But the Abu Chatzera family grows in influence at this point, and they're helped by certain key factors of the time. One was that they ran the local religious courts. There's a whole thing, which the book Kedoshim that I've been referencing goes into at some length, where the authorities in the Jewish community in Fez, which is really like the height of Jewish life in Morocco, issue various rulings that are meant to unify religious practice in the communities. And they set up rabbinical courts, and they want everybody to come to them. So the Abu Chatzera family, in their local area, on the one hand, they do support those enactments from the community in Fez. On the other hand, the locals keep coming to them to judge their cases, not to the authorities from Fez. And that's one reason why their influence grows. Another reason their influence grows is because they are distributors of tzedakah to the needy. So that also is a key factor. All of this brings us to the grandson of Rabbi Yaakov Abu Chatzera, Rabbi Yisrael Abu Chatzera, also known as the Baba Sali. He's born 10 years after his grandfather passes away. He's born in the year 1890. What happened was, Rabbi Yaakov had a son, Masud. We mentioned his son Yitzchak. This is his son, Masud, and Masud has three sons. Rabbi David Abu Chatzera, who becomes known as the Baba Du, that's the term for him. Rabbi Yisrael Abu Chatzera, that's the Baba Sali. And Rabbi Yitzchak Abu Chatzera, known as the Baba Chaki. So Yisrael is named for his grandfather, Yaakov. They just change it from Yaakov to Yisrael for reasons that I don't know. So Rabbi Yisrael Abu Chatzera, when he is very young, is already identified as somebody destined for greatness. He does not play sports. He does not play games. He studies Torah. He is raised with what's called Shmirat HaPeh, which means guarding one's mouth, right? Often we call it Shmirat HaLashon, guarding one's speech. He speaks primarily, almost exclusively, for Torah and for prayer. And that's something that stays with him. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 2, I have a quote here from the book Yisrael Saba Kadisha. Yisrael Saba Kadisha means, literally, Yisrael, the holy old man. Saba, you're familiar probably, is a term for a grandfather. It comes from an Aramaic word which refers to an old man. So this is a book that collects many of the practices of Rabbi Yisrael Abu Chatzera, the Baba Sali. So this is an entry called Ta'anit Dibur. Ta'anit Dibur means a fast from speaking, where a person says they're not going to talk that day. So they record here, we should note that our master held many speech fasts, fasts from speech. This is my translation, the original is Hebrew. And sometimes he would fast from both eating and speaking. Even on Shabbat and holidays, our master would seclude himself and fast from speaking all day. And only at night would he bring in guests and arrange a fourth meal for them, meaning the meal after Shabbat, Malava Malka, and with great splendor and beauty, but he would go the day without talking. He was also very big on Shmirat Ha'enayim, guarding his eyes. He did not want to see anything that could tempt him to sin, and again, that started from a very young age. He wore a head covering that would specifically obscure his vision. I told the story when we started, and it was in my weekly email last week, the story about his Sidur, right? The Sidur that that his father gave him, telling him that the Sidur wants him to pay special attention to every word of the prayers. At the age of 9, he was brought into the Chevra Kadisha. Now, we think of the Chevra Kadisha primarily in terms of how they take care of a body for burial. But his job was to pray at the beds of people who were dying and to recite Shema before their death at the age of 9. His brother, Rabbi David Abuchatzera, ultimately appointed him as the Rosh Yeshiva, the head of the academy in Risani, when he was, I believe, still in his teens. At the age of 13, the Baba Sali marries his first wife. She was his first cousin. That wasn't uncommon. She fell ill, and she passed away within 2 years. He then marries his second wife, Pricha Amsalem, at the age of 15, and they have a daughter. And he also marries a woman named Miriam, I don't know her last name, and produces 2 sons with her, Meir and Baruch. The family has to leave Risani ultimately because as French influence spreads, we said last time, the Muslims really start to persecute the Jewish community, feeling the Jews are loyal to the Europeans. So his family flees Risani and they go to the town of Boudanib, which is in eastern Morocco. Now, a brief record of the Baba Sali's life in Morocco before we get to certain themes. And again, I'm rushing a little bit because I also want to get to Rav Mashash somewhat. So in the year 1922, the Baba Sali takes his first visit to Israel. He's 32 years old. And he goes by boat in the Mediterranean. And he goes to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem, where he meets a very aged Kabbalist by the name of Rav Shlomo Eliezer Alpandri, who treats him with great respect and declares him a kadosh, this category of figure. He stays there for a year, and then he goes back to Boudanib, where he accepts their request that he become the rabbi of the city. He also establishes a yeshiva in Boudanib called Abir Yaakov, modeled on the one that he led in Risani. His brother, Rabbi Yitzchak, manages the fundraising and teaches. The Baba Sali is not involved, it seems, in day-to-day teaching. We're going to come back to that in a little bit. He makes another visit to Israel 10 years later, 1932. This time he travels by donkey over land. He goes through Egypt. He goes to the grave of his grandfather, Rabbi Yaakov Abuchatzera, in Egypt. In Israel, he is received with honor. He travels around to the graves of the righteous who are buried around Israel, including Rabbi Chaim ibn Attar, who we learned about previously. His trip includes the famous Tzfat visit that he takes, that I mentioned in the beginning last time, the one where he went to the synagogue of the Ari and they wouldn't let him in because they said people die there, and then he goes in and he cures whatever it is that is wrong there. It's a great trip, but he is summoned back to Boudanib. And here we get to what you were talking about, Janine. He is summoned back to Boudanib because the Alliance Israelite Universelle, this Kol Yisrael Chavirim organization that had taken an interest in the welfare of the Jews in Morocco in the 1860s, they're trying to open liberal co-ed schools in the Boudanib area. And I'm going to come back to talk about that below, but I'll tell you right now that it's not a good thing in the eyes of Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera. En route to his return, we have a story which becomes famous. It's everywhere. If you take a look at source number 3, I brought you a version of it that appears on a website, just because that way I could cut and paste it. But it's basically consistent with the reports I've seen in print. Once the Baba Sali was on a boat on the way to Israel with one of his disciples. On Friday night, while he was in his cabin and he was singing Shalom Aleichem, the boat began shaking because of heavy turbulence. The boat began to capsize dangerously, and the captain asked the passengers to get on the rescue boats. His disciple went to warn the Baba Sali, but the tzaddik continued to receive Shabbat with plenty of kedusha, plenty of holiness. He drank from the Kiddush wine, and then he asked his pupil to pour the remaining Kiddush wine into the sea. The student climbed onto the deck, and in front of everyone, he poured the wine. Keep in mind, this is not like some ancient story. This would have been the 1930s. Immediately, to everyone's surprise, the sea calmed down. The captain asked what he had done that was special, but the pupil replied it was his master who had sent him to spill the rest of the Kiddush wine. The captain went to see the Baba Sali and thanked him, but the Baba Sali replied, as Joseph answered Pharaoh in the Torah, "It is not me, it is Hashem." This is what God did. That story becomes well known far and wide. During the years of World War II, the Baba Sali moved to a larger community, Erfurt, not because of the war. The war really doesn't seem to reach the inland region where the Baba Sali lives in Morocco. We know the Germans were along the coast. That we know very well. In the rest of Morocco, Germany attempted via the Vichy government to persecute the Jews. But Mohammed V refused to allow it. There was a whole thing when they wanted Jews to have to wear the badge, and Mohammed V said, all of us are going to wear the badge. If the Jews have to wear it, then everybody will. The Germans did succeed in getting a list of the Jews in Morocco prepared in 1941, but it was being transported back to Germany by plane, and the plane was shot down. In 1942, the Americans took Morocco from the Germans. And that ended the threat. In 1946, the Baba Sali makes another visit to Israel, and he is very well received. And the legend goes, I say legend only because I don't think there's a written record of it in government records, but the way the story goes is that in 1953, Sephardi chief rabbi Rav Uziel, Rav Ben Zion Uziel, passed away. The Baba Sali was recruited to become Sephardi chief rabbi, but he declined. That's what they say. In 1951, he makes another trip. This time, he plans to make Aliyah. And he appoints his son, the Baba Meir, to take his place. Baba Meir was an established Torah scholar and judge on the rabbinical courts. He was very well respected. On the way to Israel, you get another one of those stories of the sea being churning and dangerous and the boat's going to capsize, and he pours wine into the sea and the sea calms down. Apparently, this is a thing. However, the Baba Sali did not like what he found in Israel. He found secularism, particularly in dress and education. He was trying to figure out what he should do. He consulted with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. More about that in a little bit. He consulted the Chazon Ish, leading authority in Israel in Jewish law at the time. And ultimately, he says, you know, I'm leaving. He leaves Israel. But things get worse in Morocco for the Jews, because with the founding of the state, there is hostility between the Arabs and the local Jews. The Mossad succeeds in bringing thousands of Jews out of Morocco. At this point, Mohammed V is gone. The next king is Hassan II. And he at first opposes it. But in the early 60s, he allows it, so long as we don't tell anybody that the Jews are going to Israel. And there was a significant financial payment, which I think helped, you know, speed this along. And in 1963, the Baba Sali made Aliyah for good. First, he lived in Yavne, then in Ashkelon, and then ultimately he moves to the town of Netivot, which is where he remains. And there's a lot to say about the rest of his life afterwards, but I want to instead shift to talk about certain themes that are found in his life before getting some time at least to talk about Rav Mashash. I've been monologuing a lot. Are we okay? People follow? We're good? Okay, thank you. So, first of all, the main thing that I wanted to highlight is the role of the Kadosh. And I want to compare it and contrast it with the Hasidic Rebbe in the Ashkenazi world. There are similarities between them. Both the Rebbe and the Kadosh are known for great personal piety, both in terms of how they relate to God and in terms of how they relate to other people. Both prioritize that piety in people over academic scholarship. In other words, Chassidus says that it's more important that you be pious in your relationship with God and other people, that you be focused on God, that you cling to God, than that you become an academic expert in Talmud and text. And that's seen also in terms of the Kadosh. Both the Rebbe and the Kadosh are close to God and able to intercede with God. And they're steeped in mysticism. And both interact closely with their followers. Their followers come to them for brachot, for blessings. So in that sense, you could look at it and say, you know, the Rebbe, the Kadosh, well, one is just Hasidic and the other one is Moroccan. But there are some differences. In general, with the Rebbe, there is a regal character to a Hasidic Rebbe. The Rebbe is the formally recognized leader of an entire community. It's also a continuous role, like a monarchy. There always is a Rebbe. There are, of course, a couple of Hasidic groups that have, gone their own way with it. Lubavitch does not currently have a Rebbe. Breslov has not had a Rebbe in quite a long time. But in general, there's always supposed to be a Rebbe. And when there are fights, sometimes there are two Rebbes. That's also an issue. It's a dynasty. It tends to be inherited. The Rebbe's closeness to God is often manifest in his Torah study and teaching. So I'm getting background noise. Thanks. The Rebbe will be asked not only to give blessings, but also to give halachic rulings, to give life guidance. Where should I move? Should I buy this house? What job should I take? People will go to the Rebbe for that. The Rebbe will give public classes in Torah and write books in classical Torah on the Parsha, on Jewish law, on the Talmud. It depends a little bit between different groups of Hasidim, but you find that in many Hasidic groups, Satmar, Gerer, Lubavitch, you find this kind of scholarship. It's interesting to me, actually, because I think of the stories of the Baal Shem Tov, and you don't really see the emphasis on scholarship there, although the stories mention that he had it, but you don't see it emphasized. But you definitely see it in Hasidic Rebbes in general. The Kadosh, on the other hand, is not really known for his classic Talmud Torah, his classic Torah study. You don't really see that. Take a look on your sheet at source number 4. I mentioned the yeshiva that they had in Budanib. So this is a record of the curriculum and schedule in the yeshiva in Budanib that the Baba Sali had founded. And it's reported by Rabbi Yisrael Elizera, who was the chief rabbi of Ashdod. So he says, he learned in the Baba Sali's yeshiva in Budanib. And he reports, in the yeshiva, there were 6 classes. Each class had about 15 students. There were classes of young boys, classes of youths, and in the evening there were also lessons for adults. The main study was in ethics, chassidut, and awe of heaven. That's not what you'll see in a traditional yeshiva. They're not spending a lot of time on Talmud. They're not spending a lot of time on Jewish law. The graduates study Talmud with its commentaries and Jewish law. You get older, that's a different story. Baba Chaki, that was the Baba Sali's brother, taught in the yeshiva. We only saw the Baba Sali infrequently. He would come to test the students. The classrooms were clay buildings. We learned there by candles and lanterns. The yeshiva stood in the Mela, the Jewish region in the community. There were 3 synagogues nearby. The Baba Sali prayed in the central synagogue, and there he also remained most weekdays. All of life in the yeshiva focused on the studies. Life was not easy. We rose every day at 2 a.m. for Tikkun Chatzot. Tikkun Chatzot is a prayer that is recited, or a set of prayers, really, that is recited to mourn for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the temple. And it's supposed to be recited after midnight in the latter half of the night. So they got up every day at 2 a.m. for that, and then they were involved in Bakashot. Bakashot are requests from God, prayers to God, until it was time for Shacharit, the morning prayer, which was extended. So what you're seeing here in the curriculum and schedule is an emphasis on piety, but not on traditional scholarship. The Baba Sali never became a Dayan, a rabbinical court judge. His son Baba Meir did, but he never did. So the Kadosh is not known for classic Torah expertise in the way that a Rebbe is. And he's also much more of a man of the people. There is no grand house. There is no grand clothing. He keeps an open house for anybody who wants anything. If you take a look at source number 5, this is the schedule that the Baba Sali kept. It's actually describing his schedule when he was already in Israel, but I don't see a reason to think that it deviated from what he was doing when he was still in Morocco. The Baba Sali had a fixed schedule. He would rise at 2 a.m. to recite bakashot, those prayers, requests. With first light, he would go to the nearby synagogue where there were several minyanim of local residents who rose early and rushed to work. His shacharit, his morning prayer, extended for 90 minutes in general. Just, you know, for reference, here it's usually 40. And I know synagogues where it's a lot shorter than that. He was careful that prayer not be rushed. Then the Baba Sali would continue to study with a partner or read Tehillim with the elders who had come to the synagogue. Then he returned home. And at about 9 a.m., the doors of his home would open and visitors would be permitted to enter one by one to receive his blessing. Those who came were mostly people with hard luck, seeking from the tzaddik a blessing for livelihood, fertility, or marriage. This would last until midday when he would stop for a meal. If the visitors came from far away, he would invite them to join him for the midday meal, and then it goes on in the afternoon schedule and more receiving of the public. That was his day. The Baba Sali and the Kadosh in general is really at the disposal of the community, and the Baba Sali had a practice where he would take on fasts for the sake of others. I'm not meaning fast from speaking here, although that's there also, but fast from eating. Take a look at source number 6 from that book I mentioned that records his customs. The title, Kol HaMit'aneh Nikra Kadosh, refers to a passage in the Talmud in which we are taught that those who fast are called holy. There's actually, there are different views on that there in that passage in the Talmud, but this is a view there. So, our master caused himself great suffering and fasted many fasts. Every Monday and Thursday, our master would hold a private fast, whether during short winter days or the hot, long summer days. Additionally, our master would decree private fasts for himself to prevent any suffering from befalling the Jewish people. And he would also decree a private fast for himself if he sensed that someone from the household had done something inappropriate or inappropriate for the household of this pious, holy ascetic. If someone did something that was unworthy of the household, then he would fast as well to atone for that. Shades of Eov, of Job, with his fasts when his children had their feasts. And not fast, he wouldn't fast, he would bring sacrifices. So that's a little bit of just the contrast between the Rebbe and the Kadosh. Are we clear? I'm not going too fast? Okay. The Baba Sali was known for miracle working, and specifically on behalf of those who were physically disadvantaged. This is very, very big in the stories of the Baba Sali. So as an example, if you take a look at source number 7, you get this story from the Kedoshim book. One day, when he was in the village of Skura, about 30 kilometers from Warzazat, they brought a blind woman before him. She had been blinded after she fell and was injured. Rabbi Yaakov called her name. Actually, I wrote Yaakov, but it should be Yisrael. No. This is not a story about the Baba Sali. This is a story about his grandfather. I apologize. It's still an important story about the Kadosh, but it's not about him. Making a note of that for myself here. Rabbi Yaakov called her name and asked that she tell him what had happened and where she had been going when this happened. I was en route to my elderly parents to bring them food, the blind woman said. Immediately the sainted rabbi rose and instructed her to rise from her place. The blind woman rose, holding her chair. Not like that, scolded the rabbi. Rise and start to walk exactly as you walked before this happened. The woman girded herself and rose from her place, and suddenly she began to scream, I see, I see. And to the happy people of the village, Rabbi Yaakov explained that this woman fulfilled the mitzvah of honoring her parents, and it is known that those engaged in a mitzvah are not harmed, and therefore God listened to his prayers. So suddenly, she's able to see. You had stories like that involving people who couldn't walk. This one is about the Baba Sali. If you take a look at source number 8. Once our master's son-in-law brought him a Jew whose legs were paralyzed, who wished to receive his blessing. Our master told him to wait for the evening meal, so that during the meal he would bless him with joy. Our master indeed gave him a drink during the meal. That was a big thing for those who came for the blessing to take a drink along with the Baba Sali, and they would both recite a blessing on the drink. And blessed him to be able to pray while standing, and he should merit to marry. And so it was. He was able to stand, and he's able to get married. There were blessings for people who could not produce children. This is a heavy emphasis regarding the Kadosh, and specifically regarding the Baba Sali. The Baba Sali, we've already seen, had a powerful emphasis on personal piety and mysticism. We talked about him getting up at 2 a.m. with special prayers. It's reflected in the customs in that book, Yisrael Saba Kadisha, in a big way. It's reflected in the curriculum in the yeshiva that we already discussed. It was reflected also in amulets. The Abuchatzera family were very big on writing amulets for people. And in public teaching of the Zohar, central book of Jewish mysticism. One last point was the fight against modernization. And this was a very big deal. I mentioned to you that the Baba Sali left Israel when he had originally tried to make Aliyah in the 50s. He was upset about the secularization. Take a look at source number 9. It will be an understatement to say that the Baba Sali did not like what he found in the land. Public desecration of Shabbat, drafting women to the IDF, and the spread of secular schools. The same schools he had harshly fought against in Tafilalt, which was the region that he lived in Morocco. Because what happened was, this alliance that we've been talking about tried to open schools in the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s in Morocco, specifically in the inland areas where the Baba Sali was operating. And they actually employed rabbis there from the community, but they also brought in teachers who mocked the Kadosh phenomenon and the idea of mysticism and amulets and miracle working. And it became a competition between these schools and then, on the other hand, the Baba Sali and his family. The schools started offering financial help for families that sent their kids. So the Baba Sali started a network of financial support for those who did not send their kids. He issued a public decree and curse on anyone who would send their children to the schools. He was very worried about the impact this would have on the spirituality of the community, and he was very effective. Instead, he put his support behind a network of Chabad schools, Lubavitch schools, that opened in Morocco at the time. Even though Chabad is not, Sephardi, certainly not Moroccan, nonetheless, he saw that as a better opportunity than these Alliance schools. If you take a look at source number 10 on the sheet, before he left... before he left Israel in the 1950s, he took counsel with the Rebbe from Lubavitch. The Baba Sali, like many other rabbis from his family, established a strong connection with Chabad Hasidut. The connection began in Morocco in the early 1920s when Chabad established a network of schools there. At that time, the Lubavitch Rebbe lived in France. This was not the Lubavitch Rebbe most recent one. This is his predecessor. And from there, he sent emissaries to the most distant towns in Morocco, where they established a Chabad educational network. The Baba Sali, who led a constant war against the Alliance schools, supported the establishment of Chabad schools in the area of Taflilalt, that inland region. After the passing of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, a good connection was formed between him and the new Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. And that's how you have that bond that we talked about. Okay, so I hope that this was somewhat helpful in introducing, at least, the Baba Sali, his role as an icon of Moroccan Jewry, and some of the phenomena surrounding him. And I think you can see why we call him that, even though, you know, the concept of miracle working raises all sorts of questions, without a doubt. Nonetheless, I think he qualifies for the icon category. Clear? Questions or comments before we go on to Rav Mashash? Yes, Eti.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
First of all, when they did the bakashot, was it their own bakashot or the bakashot on behalf of other people?
So I think it's bakashot in general. But you could have, there could be personal ones as well, but you could also have it as bakashot for others. That's my understanding. What was the other question?
The other question. Okay, in Israel it's very prevalent nowadays, the symbol of the hand, Chamsa.
The Chamsa, yeah.
With Jewish blessings on it.
Yeah.
When I was young, we didn't have that. For example, it was a Muslim symbol. It was not a Jewish symbol. Mm-hmm. And I think that when the Moroccans came to Israel, that's when it became prevalent, this symbol.
So I don't know much about the Chamsa.
You know anything about it? Was it the Baba Sali who introduced it?
So it's definitely not from the Baba Sali. But I don't know a whole lot about it. I looked into it years ago when we did our series on Ayin Hara and things like that, but I don't remember finding a whole lot to work with. So I don't know. It's a good question.
Okay.
Thank you. Rose?
Just for information, you're the chief rabbi now of Morocco, and I guess it just brings us to the secularism and being a good person, is Rabbi Pinto.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out of jail, did not pass go, did not collect the 100 from the...
Okay, so I'm totally not going there.
Okay, but I just want to know, in terms of this Baba Sali, was there an issue with... I know that he was against secularism and women, monetary things. Was that an issue? Honesty, was that dealt with or not?
What do you mean by an issue with money? What does that mean?
You know... Was honesty?
Yeah, no. I don't know of any allegations ever regarding impropriety in that regard. The family was, the family was known for collecting and distributing. Now, the next generations down got very involved in Israeli politics, and I don't. Yeah, that's not what I'm an expert in or here to talk about. But what happens afterwards, I don't know. But I will tell you, there were a lot of people who didn't like the whole phenomenon of the Kadosh and looked for trouble. That book that I've been quoting off and on, Kadoshim Be'eravon Mugbal, Saints Limited, if there was something, they would have it. But no, he's clean. Okay, so we're going to switch gears to talk about Rav Mashash. Nothing...